The Providence Journal presents Nick and Bob, the college basketball podcast for Rhode Island and around the nation, with your hosts, Kevin McNamara and Bill Koch.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's Pick and Pop podcast. It's all things college basketball here in Providence. My name is Kevin McNamara. I'm a columnist here at the Providence Journal, and I have Bill Koch, my co-star, alongside. Bill, how are you?
Kevin, great to be with you as always.
Christmas shopping up and started or not at all?
Yet to be started.
I'm in your boat, so, you know.
We got 2 weeks.
I like the last minute craziness. It's kind of where I am. I don't really look for deals. I guess maybe that's where neither one of us are much shoppers.
You know, I'm very much a stereotypical guy in that way. I'm a very surgical shopper.
Surgical.
I'm not necessarily a wanderer.
I see.
I have an idea of what I'd like to get. I go to a select store. I go directly to the place where I know the item will be, get it, and I'm out. I'm not really one to shop around, look around, whatever your phrase of choice may be.
I'd say every year is different for me. So we'll see. We'll see what we can pull off. We'll have to do a shopping update next week, I should say, when the teams that we cover are back into full mode. But right now they're studying for exams. And we actually have some breaking news on the Pick and Pop podcast, some unfortunate news about the Providence Friars. Star freshman A.J. Reeves. Providence just announced today that AJ will be out as much as a month, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, with a undisclosed foot injury. Bill, I am surprised by this. Number one, AJ played 30 minutes in his last game against Massachusetts, played even more than that, and starred in a win at Boston College. Those are the Friars' last two games. Obviously, the easy spin is this is a bad one for the Friars.
Yeah, awful news for one of the brightest young talents that we could hope to see at Providence. A.J. Reeves, obviously, coming in this year shooting 45% from three-point range, he's really given Providence's offense a lift right away. Just hit the ground running immediately. Had a terrific opening night against Siena and has carried that through. As you said, the three-pointer he made at the end of regulation at Boston College and the subsequent overtime win by the Friars against the Eagles, that's about as big time as it gets. A hint at his potential, and now, unfortunately for Providence and their fans, it's potential that's going to be put on hold for a little while.
Yeah, interesting. Obviously, the timing is really bad with the end of the non-conference schedule and, more importantly, the start of the Big East schedule right around the block. I will say that Providence's schedule is somewhat fortunate in that, strangely, they have their Big East bye in the second week. They open at home on New Year's Eve against Creighton and then welcome Villanova to the Dunkin' Donuts Center and then don't play for roughly a week before they go at Georgetown on the 12th. So, again, all speculation here. I do not know what AJ's injury is. I hope it's not stress fracture, because stress fracture can be much more than 4 to 6 weeks. There was no signs of him breaking anything in the Massachusetts game. Obviously, they've had a few practices since, and maybe something happened to practice in the last couple of days.
You know, strange thing, and I was saying to Bill Corey, our sports editor, before we came on the air, a lot of times you can play, maybe through some pain. You might be able to sort of manage it in a way. But it's difficult to figure out what's really going on until you have an X-ray, an MRI, something along those lines. And I would say that in Providence's case, their last game was on Friday. Maybe at some point over the weekend, AJ said to the training staff, my foot is still sore. I don't really know what's going on, and they might have decided to take a little deeper look. And those X-rays and MRIs, once you have them, can't really hide anything on there.
Right.
Those are going to clear up the picture really quickly. And I would guess, and you haven't spoken to Ed Cooley, but I would guess when you do, that he's probably going to tell you some version of he had those tests and they revealed something a little more serious than they might have thought.
Right. Just kind of continues a pretty bad stretch for the Friars, obviously mentally coming off a devastating 79-78 loss at home to Massachusetts. The Friars up 18 at the half, up 20 earlier in the game. I think everyone has kind of seen or heard about the meltdown since. Really a devastating second half for the Friars. Really a sign of a young team that Ed Cooley has been able to avoid through the first 10 games of the season. But this time it bit them. And at 7-3 at the exam break, I think Providence would say okay at 7-3, but that last loss is just a really tough pill to swallow.
There were three things out of this game that were really a shame for me. The first is that Providence threw away a really good first half. I thought they played a very good 20 minutes of basketball to start this game, had a comfortable lead at the break, and you know, really their offense was as good as I've seen it at any point this year.
I think it was their best offensive half of the season. 54%, 9 threes. You know, I mean, that's not them, but certainly outstanding.
You know, they were playing really well, and to waste that, I thought was a shame. You know, the second thing, obviously, is you let Luan Pipkins hurt you again. You know, last year he had 30 points in Amherst in a win over Providence. This year, 26, including the winning layup. You just had to do a better job accounting for that guy. And the third thing for me is what changed in the second half regarding Carl Pierre specifically. Couldn't even get off a shot in the first half. Providence did a great job, and you know, it's almost like they forgot the scouting report when they went to the locker room, because he comes out in the second half, makes 5 3-pointers. He's not a guy looking to go to the basket. He's purely a 3-point shooter, a guy who's going to hang out beyond the arc and look for a shot. And once he got going, he really sparked UMass to life.
No question. There's not many ways you can get, you know, dig out of an 18-point hole except the 3-point shot. And, you know, it's funny, we see it in the NBA so much where the 12, 15-point leads disappear, lickety-split. It usually doesn't happen as much in college, but that's exactly how UMass did it. Carl Pierre had 3 threes in about a minute and a half. And, again, there's only one thing next to Carl Pierre's name on the scouting report, and that's shoots threes. And you got to get up on him, and obviously that did not happen well enough for the Friars. And then, you know, execution down the stretch, that's really where, you know, experience and savvy comes into play. You mentioned the defensive stop that they needed, they could not get with Pipkins going off a high screen, coming right to the rim and making a layup. How he's not at least fouled on that play is beyond me. And then Ed Cooley opts not to call a timeout. Interestingly, you know, I'm not a big you need to call a timeout in that situation fan. I like the fact that you can keep the opposing defense scrambled a little bit, as long as you end up getting the ball into the, you know, the player's hands you're looking for, and that's what they did. They got Alpha Diallo on a heavily contested shot at the rim. But in retrospect, you know who was on the bench for that last shot? A.J. Reeves. So, you know, you would think you'd want AJ on the court as a bailout guy or someone that Alpha might be able to find. Maybe he was injured. Maybe he wasn't moving well. Again, in retrospect, I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah, that's one of those that, you know, I agree with you. Generally, I wouldn't want to call a timeout if I had a veteran point guard, especially, because I would trust that he'd be able to get me into some sort of set.
10 seconds, by the way.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if you're going to put the ball in Alpha Diallo's hands, that's just as good, because he's a veteran ball handler and a guy who might be able to get you a good shot. You know, but the second thing in that, obviously, is if you do call a timeout, you let the defense set up, but you would also, in that case, get your best personnel on the floor. If you have A.J. Reeves on the bench, he's a guy who you need out there. You only need to look at their previous game against Boston College to tell you that.
Good point.
You know, so hindsight being what it is, I'm sure Ed Cooley, you know, after the game, probably went home, second-guessed himself, third-guessed himself, fourth-guessed himself. All you can really do is adjust and move on, and that's what Providence will attempt to do this weekend against Central Connecticut. The question now, obviously, is how you fill the minutes that A.J. Reeves was giving you. He was starting games and playing quite well, and I wonder, Kevin, you know, how you feel they're going to address the rotation going forward here.
Yeah, you know, they can fill his minutes. I just don't know if they can fill his production. I don't think they have another 14-point-a-game scorer on their bench. I know they don't have a 3-point shooter like him.
Sure.
You know, the easy solution, and I'm sure the instant one, was Isaiah Jackson will go into the starting lineup at the two guard. He'll play alongside David Duke. Providence stays really big that way, which I know they like to do for defensive purposes. And, you know, obviously some more time for Malik White at the two guard because he's proven to be a capable three-point shooter. You know, if I had to think about who they would then go to, don't rule out freshman Chris Monroe. Ed Cooley has gone out of his way to say he's our best three-point shooter. I said, well, you do have A.J. Reeves. He says, I'm telling you, in practice, Chris Monroe shoots it as well as anybody. Maybe this is an opportunity to see what he can do.
Well, I think you've got three guys here who will be looking to come in from the cold. Chris Monroe, Mekhi Ashton-Langford, and Drew Edwards. Will any of those guys emerge here?
Yeah, I think Drew Edwards, I left him out. That's my mistake. I think he definitely will see some time because, again, can make a three and has that size. I think Mekhi is more of strictly a one. And, you know, David Duke and Malik White seem to have settled into all of the minutes at point guard right now. But who knows? You know, obviously, if Malik White has to play more two guard than usual, then those backup point guard minutes are available for Mekhi as well. So the point is they do have some options there. I wouldn't say experienced options. You know, Drew Edwards, the exception, he's a senior. But he has not played all that much this year. So, you know, this is why when fans start panicking in November and saying, Koch isn't playing, you know, McNamara, you know, he played last year. He's not... In time, you know, God usually presents problems where coaches have to use their bench a little bit.
Well, thank God Koch isn't playing because you're not winning many games if Koch is out there. I will say
you
this.
You set a mean pick.
Yes.
Yeah, a pick and
but
pop.
I don't do anything else, believe me. The good thing for Providence here is the schedule being what it is. You have a little time off for exam break here. You play Central Connecticut and then Albany, both at home. Your next real test will be at Texas. On December 21st, which will be your last game before Christmas.
And it's also the last... There's no more breaks the rest of the way.
No. So you've got two games to try and figure something out. They're both at home. It stands to reason that you're going to be heavy favorites in both. You know, try to reach some solutions at that point. And those two will present you a good opportunity to do so.
No question. And, you know, we'll again be back next week and be able to look at both the Central Connecticut and Albany games and see what kind of gains the Friars made. But this is definitely a major setback for the Friars with A.J. Reeves out for as much as a month, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. You know, this is just a projection right now. Who knows how he recovers. But his loss is a big one for the Friars, especially on offense. We're going to flip down to the University of Rhode Island. The Rams are also off with some study breaks right now. They're coming off a 79-63 win over Holy Cross, a really impressive win. Kind of a back-and-forth game where Rhode Island had two pretty sizable leads that Holy Cross pushed back within two in the second half, and yet Rhode Island had the last counterpunch and ended up with a pretty comfortable and really impressive win, Bill. We had talked about how important it was for Fats Russell and Jeff Doughton and Cyril Langevin to play well together, and that's exactly what happened up in Worcester.
Yeah, the way that they finished the game, to me, was important. You know, Holy Cross gets it down to two. I think it's 59-57 with about 6.5 minutes to go, and URI ends it on a 20-6 run. And that was a game that, similar to the night before, where Providence experienced against UMass. URI is an 18-point lead early in the second half, and everything looks easy and fluid, and then all of a sudden they can't score. They go about 11 minutes and score about 7 points, and a left-hander named Clayton Lassan comes off the bench for Holy Cross. He's scored 1 point this season. He has 13 in the second half. Starts knocking down threes, and Rhodey is in trouble.
A two-point game with 6 minutes to go.
Right. And all of a sudden, the guys who you needed to take over took over. Jeff Doughton was great down the stretch. He was 6 for 8 from the field in the second half. Cyril Langevin had a 6th straight double-double. He's averaging a double-double at this point. He looks like the premier big man in the Atlantic 10 right now. And Fats Russell reined it in a little bit. You know, I think more importantly, he took more twos than threes in this game. He actually showed a willingness to go to the paint a little bit. He got himself to the foul line quite a bit in this game, as Bill Reynolds suggested he do in our last podcast, and he made his free throws. He was 8 for 9. Mm. You know, Rhode Island as a team was excellent at the line, 24 for 27 in this game, a season high in foul shots attempted, and to me, that suggests that they were trying to attack the paint instead of settling for outside shots.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the season-long issue has been three-point shooting, and that didn't change. It was 3 for 18, but when you get so many points at the line, and then, points in the paint, they had 38 in the paint, and 24 at the line. That's a pretty good start.
How's 14 to nothing off second chances work?
There you go. That works well.
Pretty good.
Works well. And that bodes well for rebounding, 41 to 17. That was actually the most outrageous stat. 41 to 17, it's amazing they didn't win by a million.
Well, and this is, you know, what Rhodey has done a couple times now. They did it to Brown, too.
Brown, yes.
And they've addressed this through recruiting. You recruit guys who are bigger and stronger than other teams, and once you roll the balls out, it's going to show on defense. It's going to show in rebounding. Rhode Island's defense has actually been very good. Mm-hmm. According to our friends at KenPom, they're 44th in adjusted defense in the country this year. Hmm. They allowed 95.8 points per 100 possessions. That's right in line with where they've been the last two or three seasons. Mm-hmm. The reason they've struggled, obviously, is the offensive end. I would say that the three-pointers that they took in this game, even though they missed them, were better shots than, say, the ones they took in the Charleston game, which were a lot off the dribble, one pass, you know, no attempt to get the ball in the lane. These were more inside out. There was more ball movement, and maybe that's a sign of things to come. It's certainly something that they're going to need going forward. You're just not going to be able to overpower every team that you play. And the perfect example of that is going to be Sunday at Mohegan Sun.
Yeah, and the Providence game as well. You know, they were coming off a kind of physically dominating effort against Brown, and, you know, they played their first, you know, I would say physically up game against Providence, and did not be able, you know, weren't able to dominate around the rim, and then, you know, they come back against Holy Cross, get the job done, and now they may play their most physical opponent of the entire season, the rest of the way, in the West Virginia Mountaineers. And my friend Bob Huggins will be in Providence the night before, and I won't be able to see him, but, you know, I wish Coach Huggs well. Of course, I'd like to see the Rams win, but I'm being facetious. You know that I have a long, sordid history with Coach Huggs.
If a fan was looking to maybe have an impromptu run-in with Coach Huggs, what sort of establishment in Providence do you think that they should frequent on Saturday night?
He likes steak.
Okay.
So, you know, we have four or five excellent choices here in Providence.
We do.
You know, you never know. But no, I don't want to send anyone on a Huggs chase. My guess is they'll be right down at Mohegan Sun enjoying the hotel down there. And it's a great place to watch a game for any of you URI fans who have not been and don't have tickets yet. I strongly encourage it. It's such an easy place. Bill, you've been there. You get out of your car. It's free parking. You walk through a casino, and then boom, the arena's right there, and you take five steps and you're in the seating bowl. It's really, really, really easy.
Well, I'll give credit to the URI fans for this. They've played there recently against Cincinnati and against Duke, and turned out in big numbers for those games, particularly against Cincinnati. That was a home game. Cincinnati didn't travel very well. It certainly felt like a game that Rhode Island dominated, both in the seats and really needed on the floor, and it was a win that carried throughout the year a couple seasons ago. It was sort of that RPI booster that they needed. Once Selection Sunday came around, obviously they took care of things themselves by winning the A-10 tournament. But, that's definitely a venue where they'll be comfortable. It's similar to the Ryan Center in a way. It's just a little bigger, but similar design. A great take, as we've said before. And, you know, you're going to see the biggest, most physical team that Rhode Island is probably going to see. Unless they make it back to the NCAA tournament. Sagaba Kanate and Asa Ahmad, two guys who play up front, they are no joke.
No, they're as big and as talented as Cyril Angevine. You know, he won't face a team like this the rest of the season in the A-10. Maybe in Hawaii with TCU, that type of a, high-end front court. And then West Virginia also has, some good guards. They don't have the big-time, defensive guard the last couple of years. I can't think of his name. One of the better players in the country. He's been replaced by James Bolden, who's really off to a good start. West Virginia has had a strange season. They opened their season with a loss at home against Buffalo, which was, you know, somewhat shocking, and then, you know, a month later, it's not shocking at all. Buffalo's ranked like 14th, 15th in the country. And they've also had a loss to Western Kentucky, which raised some eyebrows, and to Florida. That said, so it's not a top 25, maybe not a top 35 West Virginia team, but it's the type of team that Bob Huggins always brings, you know, to the starting line. Big, strong, physical, really, really good on defense.
Yeah, Javon Carter is the name that you're looking for.
Yep.
You know, finishing in the top 10 nationally in steal percentage last year. Also, Daxter Miles was another guy in their backcourt who they graduated. Yep. You know, still, the metrics favor them. They're 32 in KenPom as we sit here and speak today. Losing to Buffalo at home, there's no shame in that, as you said. They lost to Western Kentucky on a neutral floor at Coastal Carolina. And their last loss was to Florida on a neutral floor at Madison Square Garden, a night where they only scored 56 points and really didn't get a lot going. The thing that strikes me about West Virginia's schedule, this will be their fifth game on a neutral court. They play no true road games in the non-conference. You know, that says to me that these guys, not only will they be comfortable at Mohegan Sun, but, you know, they're a big-time enough program where they can carry a name to one of these neutral site venues and get a little bit of a following. I don't know what sort of attendance they'll have at Mohegan, but, you know, going down to South Carolina or going to New York or going wherever they would like, Bob Huggins has built this thing into a name that resonates throughout the East.
Well, and also, when was the last time you turned on TV and, like, West Virginia didn't play hard?
Well, that's, you know, true.
So it kind of really, they could play on the moon with no fans, and West Virginia would say, wow, they're working at it pretty hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, Rhode Island will be an underdog in that game. Hopefully they have a home court, you know, fan advantage, but a serious test. And then when they come back, they do take another little break again, but Rhode Island's schedule after that, they have a couple important games before they go off to Hawaii.
They go to Hawaii the 22nd, and they will start with Bucknell in Hawaii. It stands to reason that if they're able to win that game, they would play TCU. You know, and that'd be another top 30-ish, 40-ish, 50-ish type game that's going to carry through the rest of the season. You know, another team that's big and strong and power five physical, you know, would be a great test if Rhode Island is able to, you know, outlast Bucknell in that first game in Hawaii. The third game up for grabs, they'll play it on Christmas. You don't know who the opponent will be. Depends on results out there at the Stan Sheriff Center. And then they come back and play Middle Tennessee, a long-awaited home game, on December 30th to wrap up the year. You know, so a critical stretch here. Actually, a few more games coming up. They play a little more frequently, which is nice.
Yeah, and you know, the travel's not easy. You know, people say, oh, you know, all these schools are really excited to make these trips, and especially Hawaii. Hawaii has, you know, that special ring to it, but that first game, you really got to watch out because oftentimes teams just aren't ready to go.
Yeah,
because the trip is difficult.
And that's where I think some of the trends that you saw against Holy Cross need to carry over. Go to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the foul line. It stands to reason you won't have your legs trying to shoot three-pointers, take tough jump shots against Bucknell or anybody else. So let's try to make some easy ones first.
You're playing against Bucknell. They could take the same plane over. So,
well, that would be nice. That would
be equal. One news item before we wrap things up that people may have seen or may have missed. The Big East has extended their contract to play the postseason tournament at Madison Square Garden for a couple of years. Really important because several conferences, the Big Ten and the ACC especially, had been buzzing around and offering the Garden incentives to get in there every fourth year, every third year. And I'd say the Garden probably thought about it for a little bit, and then they went to the Big East, and the Big East said, you know, what's it going to take? And I think financially they made a larger commitment to the Garden. It didn't work the other way. And the Big East, it's money well spent. They cannot lose that that anchor for March.
The extension's through 2028, correct?
Yes.
And
was an out in 2022, which was the issue.
I know previously the Atlantic 10 had 2 years bought out by the Barclays Center, took their tournament to Pittsburgh and then to Washington.
So the ACC could get in.
Yes, right. They're back in Brooklyn this year. The A-10 tournament has always been sort of a vagabond in a way. They've played it in Atlantic City. They've played it in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. They've played it in New York a few times. The Big East has been identifiable with Madison Square Garden pretty much since its inception. Mm-hmm. You know, once they moved that tournament there in the 80s, and you had St. John's and Syracuse and Georgetown, you know, so many great games there, they can't lose that. And I think, you know, they're savvy enough there. Val Ackerman is smart enough, the commissioner of the Big East, to realize that that tournament for them needs to be a showpiece, and it can't necessarily have the competition of one of the bigger brands like an ACC or an SEC or a Big 12 trying to butt in.
And I think what would have happened, you know, potentially is they would have it 3 or 4 years, which, you know, still sounds good, but it's just not the same.
Correct.
It needs to be automatic. It's what the coaches sell on the recruiting trail. It's what the, you know, upper administrations and the, you know, money people sell to their fans. And again, if you have to charge a little more for the tickets, last year they had the largest average attendance of any conference tournament
right.
in the country.
Right.
So they've proven in this new formation of the Big East that they can still sell it out and, you know, make the Garden, you know, big time.
Well, let's just make it relevant to Providence, since that's who's here and that's who you cover.
Yeah.
If Providence goes to their season ticket holders and they say, the Big East tournament, it's at Madison Square Garden, you can get courtside seats, you can get a box, we're going to have, you know, pregame events, day before events at local establishments. Those events sell out. You know, you've attended those.
Yep.
Those tickets sell out every time. The packages, the boxes, the suites sell out every time. If Providence's administration were to go to their fans and say, okay, this fourth year the tournament's in Pittsburgh or it's in Washington.
I think Washington could work, but keep going. How about, you know, well, whatever. Who knows where they would move it.
But convenience of travel being what it is, you can hop a train to New York. It's very easy. And New York is a destination city.
Yep.
Providence has a fair alumni base there as well through its business school. Fair amount of Subway alumni who obviously have donated a lot of money. You can see
it's
building that practice facility
and
whatever
else. Base in Connecticut and New York that right. take all the tickets.
So, you know, if you happen to move that to say
Chicago.
Yeah, you're going to appease DePaul and Creighton and have it in Chicago. No one's going to Chicago.
No.
It's going to be a very much more difficult sell.
Yeah. And, you know, if I was giving the ACC, you know, advice, and they're not going to take any advice from me, don't keep moving it around. You know, pick two cities, maybe three. But there's no reason to leave North Carolina unless you go to Washington, D.C. Give me Washington, D.C., and give me Charlotte, and you're fine.
How about Atlanta? You do Atlanta, too.
Yeah, well, the SEC has Atlanta, but I understand
fine.
What you mean. Bouncing it around, and I think, believe me, the A-10 people would say, we would like to stay in Brooklyn all the time, and I agree with them. And I think that's their plan going forward. Whenever they can get Barclays, that's where it's going to be.
I thought Washington did pretty well. They do have a fair amount of Virginia-based schools now, D.C.-based schools now. You know, I also think that the pipe dream for so many people would be, we want to fill the building, let's go to the Palestra. And it sounds romantic and nice, but you have significant sponsorship commitments that you have to meet. Those require luxury suites. The Atlantic 10 sold more in terms of revenue last year in Washington than they ever have. They did the same thing the previous year in Pittsburgh. That comes down to the luxury suites. Mm-hmm. So the place like the Palestra, yeah, you'd probably sell it out with the casual fan, but you're not going to be able to satisfy your corporate
right.
tickets. And in that respect, you know, the Big East has a total home run in Madison Square Garden with the upgrades that they've made, you know, over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, they could certainly service just about any conference who wants to go in there.
Well, long way to March. We're only in December, and we got a few games here before Christmas, and both PC and URI need to get going a little bit. Just a little on Bryant and Brown. Brown coming off a really impressive win on the weekend against
Stony Brook.
Thank you, Bill.
Who'd won 5 in a row and was 8-1.
Yeah, including wins at South Carolina, at Rhode Island. You know, You know, really an impressive win for Brown. Brown has really done well with its schedule. They've played an awful lot of home games and really benefited by that. And I think they have an awful lot of confidence heading into, exam break, and then, the Ivy League will be around the corner. And Bryant is back in action. They're the only team to play here midweek. They play Hartford tomorrow night, Wednesday, correct?
Correct, yes.
And
then they have 9 days off for their own exam break. They're back in action against Dartmouth next Friday.
Before they get going with NEC play. So good luck to everyone in exams. Good luck to our fans. And Bill, get shopping, okay?
Okay.